Welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, a.k.a. Gaston Lebanon. All right, today's episode, as always, is being recorded, well, as always, you know, things might change, but today's episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on January 29, 2025. Excuse me. Today's episode is also rated R and F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Still got that lingering cough. All right, quick reminder, shout out to all you listeners. I consider you the heartbeat of this conversation, of this interaction, or whatever you want to call it. Give it up for yourselves. All right, and shout out to you new listeners. Yay! To the point. All right, reminder, Shut Up Podcast. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast401@gmail.com. Oh my God. Bear with me, gang. In today's episode titled 236, Ça ne marchera jamais, I'll be talking about my initial thoughts and feelings about a book with that title, Ça ne marchera jamais. It's actually a book in English, and it was translated into French. I think it's called That'll Never Work, and it's about Netflix, the beginning of Netflix. And I'll be talking about how I'm going through it, and the initial thoughts and feelings, and and why the fuck I'm reading it in French. Excuse me. God damn, I still got that cold, gang. I still got that cold. No, I don't think I have AIDS, but I'm just saying, that's what I do. I do that. Every time a cold goes on longer than usual, I'm like, ah, shit, I got the AIDS. And then I remember, AIDS is transmitted sexually. Now, unless my hand has been somewhere that I don't know about, that would be, it is such a thing as, not just immaculate conception, but immaculate sexually transmitted disease. All right, science, get to work. Like, can God infect you with AIDS? Bad joke. All right, okay. Let's start with some quotes. Quotes, randomness, before we get to the main topic, all right? So, first quote goes, you think you're an introvert because you like being alone, but in reality, you just love being at peace. And you're actually extroverted around people who bring you peace. You know, that's a powerful one. I think about the rare human beings that I cross in life, and I found myself talking, realizing like the way I'm on this microphone, I've been talking a lot and realizing that, holy shit, I just gave up a lot of information. What voodoo are they practicing on me? But yeah, and shout out to those people. Second quote goes, the best weight to lose is the weight of other people's opinions. Mm-hmm. Last quote is, and it's a very powerful one, my favorite one, your relationship with yourself sets the tone for every other relationship you have. Let it marinate.
Message!
All right, let's jump to some randomness now. Should have said this at the beginning. First, let me bring up the fact that I didn't record an episode last Sunday, and how's that line go? It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without an episode of Shut Up Podcast to step to. No, it's more the fact that I didn't put out any announcement, and I apologize. I committed to doing Sunday and Wednesday, but here comes the excuses. I mean, here's the truth. Here's the truth, right? It hit me. It's like, Beats, your goddamn podcast. You're in charge, all right? You've been consistent. It's okay to have a an off day. What happened is on that Sunday, I ended up doing a, I was working, doing some overtime. I'm on this project, and Sunday required close like a 12-hour day, man. Close to a 12-hour day. And that's just staring at a laptop and just answering the, but whatever. It's it took a lot out of me. That's my point. And I had this goddamn cold. By the way, shout out to you, parent. Mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. Somewhere there's a mother going, you pussy. They got cold, still taking care of this their kids. But yeah, anyways, whatever. There's something going around, folks. You'll know it when you get it because it drains the fuck out of you. So I was able to pull off the 12-hour shift. But after that shift, I was just dead. I actually tried to record a brief episode explaining how, hey, there won't be any episode. By the time I hit, I recorded it, all beautiful and everything. And then by the time I got to uploading it, passed out. So here we are. All right, here we are. So my bad, folks. One episode behind. But I am considering going back to one episode a week. Whatever. No. I'm talking shit. All right. See, I'm going to blame the white man, all right? I blame the white man for taking all my time. All right, okay. Second item. It goes, right. I guess you noticed the new beat. All right, so on the last episode, I remember I was explaining how, what did I say? How I wasn't sure I liked this new beat. After listening to my old theme, my old theme song, and going for the lyrics. What I didn't realize I was feeling at the time was sentimental. I was going through. It's like, I don't know if you've ever done a decluttering exercise. I recommend it. If you're one of those people who has clutter, if you ever get to a point in your life where you're able to declutter, like you get rid of all the crap you don't need, give it to, anyway, it's a great exercise. By doing that exercise, I've been getting better at letting go of the old and embracing the new. Well, when it comes to my crap. Anyways, what I didn't realize at the time is part of what was making me not like the new beat. By the way, the name of the producer, his name is, oh shit, really gonna forget his name? Is it Rich Latta? Rich Latta. Oh my God, you really gonna forget his, whatever, okay. I'll give him his proper shout outs afterward. One thing I will not give him a shout out mispronouncing his name. No disrespect. Anyway, so I had gotten a new beat produced and listened to my old beat and I was feeling sentimental. So I was like feeling like, I don't think I like this new beat. And then finally I got myself to insert the new beat. But my point, long story short is, yeah, no, I'm feeling the new beat. All right, it's I'm not sure what I'm gonna do with the old theme song. I might just put a link to it. I still love it, but I'm just saying. Moved on. Sorry, I'm laughing at the fact that on the last episode I was talking about how my current beat feels like my wife, and the new beat feels like the skank hoe with the big titties and the fat ass and the beautiful smile, who works as a secretary that I cheated on my girl for, you know? And so that's why I was feeling like shit. Now it's more like, how can I come back? It's like my wife passed away and she gave me her blood. My point is, I don't feel guilty. I feel better about transitioning from this new format, episode 36. Yo, change is inevitable, kids. It's inevitable. I don't want to be one of those people who can't accept change. So all this to say that, new podcast, new beat. No, okay. New beat. New intro music. Also remember, the reason why I wanted an intro music is because I was trying to shorten my intro for the podcast. Like, I was realizing that it's like probably 5 minutes. If you're listening to, when I listen to a podcast, I guess it depends on, and when I listen to, for the most part, I'm like, yo, let's get into the goddamn topic. I don't want to hear about your promotions. I don't want to hear about, forget, just get into it. But for me, my intro is more meant to, yeah, so I knew that since I already did, I already do the shit like, welcome to Shut Up Puck, I'm your host, yada, 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 fuck Whitey and all that. I already have that in that buffer there. And you know what? I think I'm going to bring back the thing I see at the end of this podcast is protected by the red, black, and green and all that shit. And I represent that. Essentially, the intro is meant to establish who this podcast is for, who the target audience is for. You know what? I think I'm going to make an episode about my target audience. But anyway, but my point is, the intro was already eating up 1 minute. And I was thinking about how when I was binge watching The Sopranos, this was in the early days, before skip intro was a thing, how much I was getting annoyed by the intro song. It's a good intro song, but it was just getting annoyed. I'm like, come on, man. Does Tony die or not? I want to see the next episode. You know, you just want to get into it. And whatever. Call this the grip. So long story short, new format. Hope you like it. I mean, hope you like it, but if you don't, I mean, dumpy. All right. This is like housekeeping. Yeah, by the way, I'm in the middle of working up. I told you, shutuppodcast.com is the website, and I'm trying to work out design a new layout for the shutuppodcast.com when you get to that site. I'm not sure whether I want to go with a traditional blog site and, you know, just insert the player from Castos into, like, I don't, either I'm going to have like a regular blog site where it lists several episodes or just a web page that just takes you to the featured episode. And if you want to go to the archive, go to Castos. I don't know. I'm still debating, but I'm deciding what I want to do. The only thing I can tell you, the one thing I can tell you is, as I'm just trying to decide what to do with shutuppodcast.com, this is for you nerds out there, is how I downloaded this. Essentially, I downloaded what's called XAMPP. It's a web browser, so I can run WordPress locally and fondle around and try to figure out and work. Have a local copy of my website. That's what I'm trying to say. All right. I do have it on my Ubuntu server, but my Ubuntu server is slow as fuck. Like, I need to upgrade that machine. You know, I'm going to need to start asking donations. But yeah, anyways, that's where we at. So we got this, all right? So I talked about the missing episode, the new intro instrumental, and the website. Excuse me. No, okay. Now, I know, again, it's been a while since we've talked. And so this is by internet standard. This is old news, but I got to bring up Elon's dog whistle. This whole phenomenon of Elon doing the Nazi salute sign. It's just getting complicated, right? Hold on. Let me just make sure I get this right. Okay, I'm going to Google Elon Musk Nazi sign, and I'm going to fuck up his name. Netanyahu. I'm just going to, because I remember seeing a headline. I want to confirm that's what he looks. Okay. Elon jokes about Nazis after you motherfuckers. Okay, this is the new headline. I wasn't expecting that one. Hold on a second. I'm going to go through that. I'm going to read the first paragraph, see how it goes. And by read, I mean my reader's going to do the reading. Oh, that's me. Okay, so Elon, here, let's just go for it.
Elon Musk jokes about Nazis after Netanyahu defends him as great friend of Israel. Mm. ADL chief blasts tech billionaire over puns on his X account, after taking flack for saying gesture at Trump inauguration event wasn't a Nazi salute, the Holocaust is not a joke. No, JTA Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu came to the defense of Elon Musk on Thursday, days after the billionaire and prominent Trump ally was accused of delivering Nazi salutes at a presidential inauguration rally. 1 hour later, the world's richest man was cracking Holocaust jokes on social media.
Oh, shit!
Elon Musk is being falsely smeared, Netanyahu wrote on Musk's own social media account, X, Thursday morning. He avoided addressing Musk's gesture directly but went on to call the tech mogul a great friend of Israel. Netanyahu.
All right, I'm not going to go for this whole thing, okay? I'll put the link in the show notes. You can read it for yourself. This is from the Times of Israel. Look. I was really going to talk about the dog whistle aspect of what Musk is doing, but here, let me, one thought at a time. First, what I'm going to say is, when I heard about Netanyahu defending Elon Musk, I was getting ready to say something insensitive about Israel. Insensitive / ignorant. And after reading this, I'm like, nah, man. Nah, no, I'm not going to make this about Israel. I am going to make it about Netanyahu, his racist ass. His, like, yeah, nah, come on, man. Anti-Semite's not a problem unless you are not white. Look, I'm, this is me siding with the oppressed right now. My thought lost. Just during the summer, well, you've heard me on the podcast, I was very angry at the state of Israel for what they were doing to Palestine, for the genocide, and how I was, yeah, I was out there. I was like, yo, fuck. I mean, Hitler died just so y'all could do the same thing he did. I can see all that. I still have that anger in me. But I still have space for this asshole. Look, ain't shit funny about the Nazi salute, playing it down. I'm gonna bring back a scene in the Black Klansman when I love that scene where the undercover cop, the Jewish guy, not the black guy, the Jewish cop, goes in and he's having a discussion with this white supremacist, and the white supremacist, the real white supremacist, is saying, "Man, Holocaust never happened." And while the other dude, the Jewish guy, impersonating a white supremacist, he's on undercover, he goes, he's playing a game. He's saying, nah, fuck that. Never happened? Nah, I wished it happened. Like, he's playing a role. It's like, yo, 6 million, drop, just dead. One guy says, it never happened. While the other guy is saying, nah, I wish it happened. Now, when I saw that scene, I was like, yo, that cop is like, that undercover cop is trying to show this dude what real hatred looks like. While the real white supremacist, the modern day white supremacist, he's playing an even, I was going to say, even more cruel game of being like, yo, that Holocaust shit never happened. Now, initially, I thought, no, I still believe. No, because I'm a sensitive person, for the sake of conversation, I might change my opinion later, but I'm going to say it's equally as cruel. The genocide, the murder of all those lives is as bad as denying that it happened. It's a fucking cruelty. I remember the first time I... No, I'm not going to talk about it, but I was going to say the first time I heard about, I was introduced to the genocide, the Holocaust denial. I didn't understand it. This is how innocent I was. I didn't understand. It didn't make sense to me. I'm like, oh, maybe they just need to read a book. Maybe they just need to be informed. I didn't think it was possible to be so cruel to be like, yo, those tears are fake. Show up to a funeral and being like, yeah, man, nah, fuck that. That motherfucker in the casket, he ain't dead. Y'all making this up. You're just making an excuse to not show up to work. there's a level of cruelty that hard for me to process. So what I'm saying all this, that this whole Elon Musk Nazi salute, look, we agreed what happened was all fucked up. But now Elon Musk is playing this game of, nah, I was just doing some Roman gang sign. Or I was just doing some, it has nothing to do with the Holocaust. I mean, I can understand it from the perspective, hold on, let me be clear what I mean by understand it. From the perspective of people who didn't suffer in the Holocaust, yeah, all this shit is a joke to you. But for the victims, the descendants of the victim, that shit ain't fucking funny. Yo, I got family, relatives who died. And that salute was probably the last thing they fucking saw. Or before they got sent to the camp. The motherfuckers who, like, did us harm. Again, it's one of those times where I feel like I'm just might be just too sensitive to exist in this world. Because to me, it's a level of cruelty that's, like, there's people on the internet going defending Elon Musk. You know what? Let me take a quick pause so I can change to my next point. And by pause this, I'm going to play this clip of this TikTok clip of a dude making a point about Elon Musk is doing the gang sign, the dog whistle aspect of it, man. And that's the part that scares me the most. But break it down, brother.
The more dogs there are in the world, the less quiet their whistles need to be. Mm. This isn't about dogs and whistles. Stay with me. I remember 6 years ago, I was 14, a year before I started posting on this app. All the talk at the time were about how there were these online spaces forming, QAnon, 4chan, that were cesspools, breeding grounds for white supremacists, the far right, all that was happening. One particular story at the time was that people that were on those sites, when they would see a post that was perpetuating white supremacy, anti-Semitism, they would respond with an okay hand gesture, right? It then evolved into a dog whistle where these white supremacists involved in these very niche communities were able to signal to one another that they were a part of that community as well. Dangerous dog whistles for sure, but quiet. Real quiet. I don't think y'all are really hearing me, because what I said earlier is that the more dogs there are in the world, the less quiet their whistles need to be. So let me stop beating around the bush. Elon Musk is a white supremacist and been there. He was born and raised in apartheid South Africa, where his family's wealth was completely and utterly funneled through the structural subordination of black Africans. He's not a fan of black and brown immigration because in that case, they're replacing white people, but he is a fan of the skilled engineers that he imports because it makes him richer and pushes for a greater techno-feudalist society. He's a eugenicist, believing only good and smart people should be populating the earth.
What else is there? See, this is just off the dome.
He bought Twitter and subsequently gave far-right online communities, which used to be somewhat fringe, a mainstream platform to flourish and spread their ideology. And then we get to the salute. And I'm not going to get into the Roman and German distinction because I genuinely couldn't care less. But my point is that everything I just said about Elon has been said before. And I'm sure Elon himself knows that people are saying these things about him. He had a whole interview with Don Lemon where he was bringing those things up. So if you truly did not want to be associated with any of these things, why would you choose to do anything even remotely close to a... I be moving more tech, making a TikTok video just so that the comments don't derail in a way I don't want. And that's because this wasn't for us. This wasn't Elon's way of teaching us the slight differences between Roman and German salutes. It was supposed to signify to a certain group that I'm with y'all. So those who were supposed to get it, got it.
Those who were supposed to get it, got it. And that's the point. That's the part. Okay, so I talked about the cruelty aspect of it. All these motherfuckers defending Elon Musk. But this is the part I want to get at, is the dog whistle aspect of it. It took me a while to understand the concept of a dog whistle. I mean, I know what a dog whistle is, but I grew up in Canada. Sure, our racism, for the most part, maybe not as violent, if we were, like, degree-wise violent on the American side. But it's enough to drive you insane. Because it's just, that's what it is. Constant dog whistles. It's constant, I didn't know saying nigger was racist. It's constant, I didn't know. Look, I didn't know what you, I didn't grow up with any black people. How am I supposed to know what you niggers are offended by? You know, it's constant. If it's not the French, it's the English. It's constant fucking with your mind. It's constant gaslighting. It's constant. It's just a word, you know. Anyway, so for me, what scares me is exactly what he just said, is him shouting out his homies. That was a shout out to the homies. That was, yo, Proud Boys, stand by and, you know, stand by and stand down. Hold on. Wait for the word. This motherfucking Trump just released a whole bunch of January 6th. Released a whole bunch of January 6th folks. Those motherfuckers are going to be loyal to this guy. So this is what modern day racism looks like. And this is what I was trying to say about Canadian racism. It's doing or saying racist shit at a frequency that only people like us, black folks, will detect, will get, and his homies will understand, and everyone else will be like, "What? I don't think that was racist," or we'll have enough cover to be able to defend. It's essentially is the way racism works nowadays with white people is, as long as you don't do something that other white people will be able to say, "Oh shit, dog, that was some fucking racist." Like some Derek Chauvin. What Derek Chauvin did, he put white people in a situation and said, "Yeah, dude, that was fucked up. That was fucked up. Okay, we can't, I mean, I want to defend you, but I don't want to be associated with you. Next time, holy shit, shoot the camera first. Take the camera off. What the fuck?" It's doing race. I've been in a situation where, and that's where I met my match, right? I was dealing with this white dude, and the racism was way too at a frequency that I was like, "Is this motherfucker fucking with me?" But everyone else didn't catch it. And if I were to bring it up, they'll be like, "Ah, dude, you're exaggerating. Or you're making you blacks and your racism." Sometimes I'm convinced that sometimes to white people, racism is a word that black folks created to piss them off, to annoy them. There's a lot of white people who want to believe that racism isn't as bad as black people keep making it out to be. Those are the white people Elon Musk counts on to be like, "Hey, it was just a Roman salute, idiot." Meanwhile, "Hey, home, I got y'all, dog. I got y'all." It's kind of scary. It's as scary as the first time I heard Chuck D say the line, "You say you can't see who's in cahoot because the KKK wears three-piece suit." The idea that they ditched their bed sheets and now they're wearing three-piece suits. Now they're cops. Now they're politicians. Now they're tech billionaires. Waving salutes, Nazi salutes. That's fine. Anyways, see, they might be more successful. It's like, okay, look, this time around, for the Nazi movement, let's stay away from killing anyone who looks white. We can get away with that. Let's go with some serious minorities. It's just, if they look white, if they're Jewish, we'll give them a pass. Hold on. Is it Ku Klux Klan? Did they hate Catholics or the Protestants? Well, let me, KKK. I was shocked when I read that. Protestants? Or is it the Catholics they don't like? Oh, shit. I'm not going to do this goddamn research. Anyway, whatever. But I remember reading up. I'm like, what the fuck? But they're also white. Trust me, man. Look, man. Once they're done with us, they'll be coming for you. But anyways. Yeah. That's my thought on the Nazi salute and Elon Musk Nazi salute. Fuck you and anyone out there trying to like cover for him, because that's the point. That's exactly the point, is getting us to argue over this shit. I saw this one TikTok video saying like, "Oh, we should be, it was just a distraction so Trump can pass all these executive orders. That's what we should be talking about." It's like, no, talk about all of it, man. We're like... Anyways, I'm just going to end this segment with watch your back, man. I mean, another reason to watch your back. All of us are all in, like, I think we're all pushed into, well, shout out, I don't know if there's any of you who are proactive, but most of us are in this state of, fuck it, all right, let him throw the first punch and hope to hell we survive it. I think we're all in this state of, fuck it, they gonna make a move, we don't know what it is, but when they make it, here's hoping we survive it so we can clap back. Constant state of aggravation. All right, okay. Here's another thought while we're talking about Trump. Yeah, holy fuck. That motherfucker. You know the real winner of this Trump election? The media. Because now they got something to talk about. Holy shit. Okay, well, yo, okay, hold on. Maybe this is the time. Trump is doing some fucked up. Tune in at 11 to find out what Trump is going to do next. Anyway, so one phenomenon I noticed on the internet is people who are like, if I was an American citizen who voted for Trump and then regret it, you know what I'm not doing? Going online telling people about it. Poor me, holy shit. I didn't realize that he was, holy shit, he's deporting all these illegals. I didn't know my birth certificate wasn't renewed. Holy shit, now I got to go back to, I don't know, insert. I got to go back to some country that I don't know shit about. Anyway, whatever. It's, I don't trust people who go online and be like, I regret my choice. I mean, are you trying to make me feel better? And I don't, you know, I'm way past the we told you so. I told you so. It reminds me of one of my relatives during the COVID lockdown. And he was a COVID denier. And he caught COVID. COVID denier catching COVID. You know what I didn't feel? Vindicated. I didn't feel like calling to say, told you so. Nah, it's just, you're disappointed. You're angry. You're sad. It's like, it's unfortunate it had to happen. It's unfortunate your power of discernment failed you. I'm saying I'm not one of those people who are like told you. I'm like way past it. I'm in. Let's wait for him to throw the first punch and hope to hell we survive it. I don't have a plan. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I don't have a plan. On all you motherfuckers who said, yeah, I'm not voting for Kamala. I don't know what your fucking plan is, but the plan was hope these assholes vote for Kamala. Now I I don't know what the plan B is. I guess is now I'm living in Canada. Hope these assholes don't vote for Pierre Poilievre. a vote for PP is a vote for Elon. Remember that, Canada. All right. Okay. Next item. Okay, there's a lot of news about all these companies getting rid of their diversity and inclusion equity programs. And I think this brother helped me like sum it up perfectly, right? This brother on TikTok. By the way, okay, the TikTok content creator for the first one was, are you kidding? MILF. Love Jay. MILF Love Jay. That's a clever one. MILF Love Jay. Now, this next content creator is going to say something that pretty much summarizes perfectly all y'all anti-DEI company or don't see the value in having DI programs, but break it down, brother. Here we go.
If you do not want a diverse workplace, then you do not deserve a diverse consumer base. We need to follow in the examples, teachings, and legacies of those who came before us. Economically boycott companies that are against diversity and inclusion for all.
Repeat that.
If you do not want a diverse workplace, then you do not deserve a diverse consumer base. We need to follow in the examples, teachings, and legacies of those who came before us. Economically boycott companies that are against diversity and inclusion for all.
A diverse consumer base. I love that. I'm just going to leave. I love that word, a diverse consumer base. Well said. Content creator is, I am... I am Davion Tatum. I am Davion Tatum. Tatum. All right. Follow. Okay. Yeah, that's what's up, man. Next time your white friend tries to tell you that or tries to argue with you about how DEI is just to give a leg up to people who aren't white or whatever, or how no fucking merit, there should be on merit. It's like, look, asshole. One, it's been proven that we can't trust you white folks to look at the pile of resumes of people with fucked up names. Two, we're trying to fix the mistakes from the past. And three, if you don't value, how do you say, a diverse workplace, then fuck it, man. Y'all don't need my money. Let me go to somewhere else, man. Just put up the whites only sign. Just, you know, put up the whites only sign, and then, you know, I'll be like, oh, okay, cool. I promise I won't burn down your business. But give me the heads up that I would rather that my employee are white. Let me know that. That's cool. That's cool. Have your white business. I'm going to hang out with the one that encourages diversity. All right. Okay, let me get rid of this one. This is not going to be on the agenda. Okay, last point I'm going to make is just Free Luigi. Someone made an interesting point about how, if you notice how people aren't talking about Luigi Mangione, is that his name? Yeah. We're being manipulated. Someone posted this. I found this on Reddit. We're being manipulated in anti-money memes. Notice how Luigi completely disappeared from the headlines. That's because when the media found out the public loved him, they had to stop talking about him. Oh, wow. They locked the comments. Really? Anyways, this is me saying Free Luigi. Let's not forget this. Yeah, man. It's same as the mass protests in cities across the U.S. when Mango Mussolini assumed office. Who's Mango Mussolini? Whatever, man. Free Luigi. That's my only point. All right, gang. All right, that's it for quotes and randomness. And let's just jump into final thought. Before that, we're going to take a quick break. All right? Okay. Peace. And we are back. I know I am. It's just me, but it feels weird saying I am back. We are back. I'm back. I'm back, baby. I mean, you know, you get yourself war. Whatever. I'm back. Okay. I don't think I'm going to go to the office tomorrow, man. This, I thought it was getting better. But I just remember I did something really stupid today. It's freaking cold in Ottawa in the 613. And I went out there with my jacket open. Part of it was because I had difficulty. You know what? That's kind of embarrassing to admit. But yeah. But point is, jacket open. And I think I made shit worse. So you can hear the cough. Here's hoping this cough is like, isn't contagious in a digital fashion. Like your brain isn't like, hey, it's been a while since we haven't had one of those. Let's start coughing too. But anyway, all right, okay. Let's pull through. Okay, we are nearly done here. Okay. All right. Last thought. I think I'm gonna call this segment Dernière Pensée. Oh, Pensée Finale. It's not like that. I'm remembering that, oh, that's right, you speak a second language. And B, I should use it more often. Because, again, gets closer to who my target audience is, but the point of this podcast is me getting closer to my authentic self and working with the people that it attracts, that gravitate to it. I spent probably a significant portion of my life being what I thought I was supposed to be, or being what the next person or the loudest person next to me wanted to be. And so I'm on this journey of self-discovery and part of self-discovery is accepting that, yo, some people ain't gonna fuck with you anymore. But open the door to new people. Open the door to new people. So French, my French is, exactly what my teacher said it would happen, right? You grow up in Canada, you grow up in, first language is in French, but you grow up in Ottawa, the city like Ottawa, where the majority of people are English. People speak French too, but it was the in thing to speak English. So that's why a lot of us Francophones, all us kids who grew up with the first language or second language being French, first, second, third language being French, but really put an effort to learn English later in their life. Shout out to Sesame Street, by the way. Anyway, so you learn English, and our school used to do shit like punish you for speaking English, and the intention was meant to force you to practice your French, because you'll lose it. Now, I remember at the time, you know, thinking that I'm smarter than the adults. I'm like, how the fuck does one lose a language? Fuck that. I'm going to keep speaking English, because how the fuck am I going to lose? What, am I going to develop amnesia? Anyways, they were right. What I'm saying is, not that I'm defending the white man's language, but speaking French is a thing. It's part of my description. If I were to make a biography of myself, that book would probably be in French and English. And I've repressed my French side, despite the fact that I speak with my parents. Okay, you know what? It's a longer conversation on why I used to repress my French side, but I've repressed my French side, and part of it was because I was just fitting into the dominant culture. And I repressed it so much that it got to a point where I'm like, oh, shit, that's right. I speak a second language. I used to hang out with folks that I used to talk to or deal with people who I thought the reason they had difficulty understanding me is because I had a limited vocabulary. And I remember feeling so stupid only to realize that, hey, dummy, you speak a second language. Not to make excuse to not speak proper in one language, but I will make that excuse. But I'm saying, but it's not cutting myself some slack. If I'm not able to use six-syllable words like this dude, it's not because you're less than, it's because they've had time to focus on one language. You've been all over the place. Anyways, so I say all this to say, that's why I forced myself to find a book. I remember I was on audible.com. They had a 2-for-1 special on Audible, and it just, were they all French book? But I remember they had a 2-for-1 special on Audible, and I said, you know what, fuck it, let me pick some books in French. And I remember seeing this book by Netflix. Now, I'm not usually, you know, most of us, I'm going to say Franco-Ontarian, most of us French kids, speaking English kids, hate translated shit. So this is an exception. This is a big deal. So I saw this book. It had the big Netflix logo on it, and it said, ça ne marchera jamais. And I'm like, fuck it, let's give it a try. And I'm glad I did, because it's been a great read. It's a great story. It's, again, like I said, the book was initially written in English, by, where's the information from? Yes, I do. Translated in English written by Mark Randolph, who is the co-founder of Netflix. Let me make sure I got that right. Is he co-founder? Iride Mark Randolph. And Mark, oh, wow, Bernard Randolph. Wait, what? Okay. Bernard Randolph, an American tech entrepreneur, advisor, and speaker. Of course, he is. He is the co-founder and first CEO of Netflix. Okay. See, I do speak French. All right. And it's a great read. Trust me, man. But here's, again, about the story of Netflix. I'm talking, like, from the beginning when they were selling, before they were streaming servers, the streaming service, they were sending out DVD in the mails. They had a catalog. You go for their movie selection. You pick three DVDs, and they would mail it to you. Now, I don't think they had that service in Canada, but I used to live in the Bay Area, so I was a big movie buff, so I got in on that program. And it's probably a reason why I still have a Netflix account, even though sometimes they ain't shit to watch on Netflix. Fucking disappointed. But I think I stick with Netflix just because they were the original OGs of streaming services. Everyone else is like copying them. Anyways, but yes, no, I remember that service. One of the most memorable DVDs that I got from them was The Sopranos, first season of Sopranos, and I still remember. I binged watch through them. How much CDs, DVDs would they give you? One, I forget. Oh, one DVD had three episodes in there. Long story short, I watched, first time I watched The Sopranos was, yes, racist ad, before The Wire, was through them, through their mailing service. Anyways, like I said, great read, but I'm not done reading it. Let me see how far I got. Let me get this information. I am at chapitre, for you English folks, chapitre is chapter, is 6 I'm at chapter 10, and there are 19 chapters. Yeah, you know what? I got to really pace myself because if I overdo it, I start hating the voice of the reader. But I really need to pace myself. So I'm at chapter 10. There's 19 chapters. And all I want to talk about is not necessarily the book, but more the thoughts and feelings, the personal notes that I've been. This is why I do audiobook, gang, because it's very common that I will, if I read a book, and my brain will start thinking about the material that I'm ingesting and go somewhere else and forgetting that I'm reading the book. I'll be like, ah, fuck, what line am I at? Ah, shit, whatever. With the audiobook, what I love is that my brain can still go elsewhere, like ingest, but it forces me to like take in the book, even though my brain is like taking a trip, thinking about all kinds of other things related to the book. So, in particular, step one is as I'm reading this book, I find myself reminiscing on who I used to be. What's funny is on this podcast, I talk a lot about growth, about being a better person, but this book had me thinking about a part of me, for the sake of conversation, is gone. And I kind of miss probably the one aspect. And that part is I used to be a more optimistic. And that says a lot because I'm pessimist. But I was way more optimist during when I used to live in California. In the early days of when I used to live in California. I'm not saying California made me more optimist. But what happened is, in that era, I was a new graduate, graduated in 98. I mean, on the resume. Well, I graduated in 97, actually. And, but I call it my first real gig because I had the kind of salary that allowed me to move out of my parents' house and live in my own apartment. How much was I making then? 35 grand a year? But that was a big deal back then. It was my first tech job. Was it 35 or 40? Whatever. I remember it was, for me, it was like, dude, it was way better than McDonald's. It's like way better than minimum wage here. I was wearing a suit to go to work, but I remember, yeah, graduated from school. Hold on. Excuse me. Graduated from school. And the other thing, too, when I was in school, I was constantly surrounded by material, smart people, other people just talking about, you know, we talk about school subject. One kid is talking about his engineering project. Another kid is talking about some theory or some math concept and how it could be used to, I don't know, create a bomb or get bitches. But my point is, not only was I learning, but I was in a situation where my brain was like applying new ways to apply this information. Like my brain, I felt, was like firing on all cylinders without drugs. Anyway, and I think there was like a sense of, I felt powerful. I've said before that if I were to win the lottery, I'd go back to school. Because, yeah, like I said, I hated school, but I loved learning. And so I remember during that period, I was like, I just felt powerful. And, yeah, when I graduated from school, my first job was related to, the Y2K, dealing with Y2K. Fucking old. Shout out to all you old heads who know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Y2K, there was a shitload of money for that. Then after Y2K, it was the dot-com era. And the thing about the dot-com era, it's like, it was constant stories of, oh shit, instant billion. Fuck crypto. Motherfuckers were like, oh, yo, I figured out a system to send panties over the internet, whatever. Panties.com. Everyone was coming up with a .com. Everyone was, we're reading about all these people making millions of dollars or becoming rich in Silicon Valley because of a great idea, and everyone was like on that train. And I remember Napster. That's right. Back then, I was trying to figure out a business that would allow me to combine my love for music and IT. I wanted to bring them together. And it's funny. Yes. Okay. So I told you I was optimistic, but I wasn't. I didn't believe I would have a great idea. I always thought that I would be next to a person who had a great idea, and I would use all my talents to make it happen. That was the extent of my optimism. Look, my optimism was good enough to get me to be like, yo, I want to be one of the players. To say, fuck it, I'm moving on. I'm moving from Ottawa, and I'm going to live in Silicon Valley. Because my hope was, I was going to marry me a rich man. No, I was going to work for the right company, and they're going to get bought off, and I'm going to get rich through stock options. That was the goal. Live your dream. Oh, you know what? Okay, let me give myself some credit. I also was hoping to work for Napster, because I believed in what the fuck they were doing. And, Napster was, I lived in Sunnyvale. Okay, I'm giving you too much information here. Napster was, their headquarters was nearby. Napster, are they still around? Napster, shout out to Sean Fawning. What's he up to? I really hope he didn't vote for Trump. Headquarters, okay, so peer-to-peer, technology, history. Okay, I was looking. But my point is, Napster was there. And trust me, I did apply to work for Napster. Didn't get a response, but my point is, I was there, sent them a resume, and I was on standby. If they needed me to come in to do an interview, I was ready. I also went to, back then, mp3.com existed. Mp3.com was, their big claim to fame was, making mp3 a big deal. Well, not just making it a big deal, but they were trying to, they had an idea of, yo, upload your CD collection. We'll put it on our servers. So your CD, basically the cloud, kind of like streaming. We'll make your CD collection available wherever the fuck, if you're at work. Because back in the days, kids, what we used to do is you would go to work or school and you would have if you were like me, you had a shitload of CDs in your bag because you can't decide what to listen to. And what NASA said is, fuck that, upload all your shit, and I'll be available on the internet. Problem is, they didn't clear that with the music business. Music business was, you're pirating our shit. And they got, just like NASA, they got the shit kicked out of them, man. Let me put it this way. I think what I'm trying to say is, tech bros back then went to war with the music and the film industry. And loss. And what I'm saying is, I joined that war and I came back with my tail between my legs. I honestly thought we were going to win. I believed in the fucking cause. Actually, you know what? I didn't really get that close to the battlefield. Who am I kidding? Right, I forget. I'm in the middle of talking about the Napster book. My point, reading the book made me think of that era, that young version of myself. I was, what was it, like 25? I was really young. And it was during the dot-com era. And yeah, I wanted to work for the right startup that was going to go big. I was way more optimistic. I had way more optimism back then than I do have right now. I think if I was talking to you young folks, trying to imagine your future, I want to tell you to hold on to your optimism. But the thing is, as you get older, the world starts to make way more sense. You start to understand it better, and it chips away at your optimism because you just, okay, yeah, snow, winter, spring, summer, winter, spring, summer. It goes in cycles. Yeah, sure. You have your good days, you have your bad days. But a lot, yeah, I think when you get older, it's your challenge is to get better and not bitter. It's very common. A lot of people my age are like, yo, gone bitter. Like, you got to have to keep your distance. But anyways, so that's what I mean by I was way more optimistic then than I was right now. It's the optimism is somewhat there, but it's, again, just my clear understanding of the world. And I'm like, oh, shit, things going. Like, look, shit are going back in. Nazis are back in style. White racism is back in style. Holy shit. We are nowhere fucking close to a solution to racism. Nah, man. That shit made a comeback. Anyway, whatever. So that's what I mean about how losing my optimism. It's there. You know what? Okay, maybe I should give this one some thought. But I'm realizing maybe I still have the optimism, but it's in a different format. It's like more 3D. The optimism that I had back then was less realistic. Like, it's like, yes, it was less realistic because I was also a religious person, so I believed in the David and Goliath story. I believed in the God will make a way. But the thing is, yeah, but you still got to work for it. It's like I was still holding on to, you know what? Okay, I think I'm trying to say, I'm realizing that my optimism was, maybe the optimism I have now is just way more realistic. Still, listening to these guys talk, in no way, yes. I just realized I went from saying my optimism is gone from realizing, nah, my optimism is just more realistic. Because as a youngin', I was a child. Anyways, but the one thing, the one part of the story that gets me is how when they were first starting out with Netflix, when Rudolph Randolph, is that his name again? Make sure I get his name right. Mark Randolph, yes. When he had the idea for it and he got the funding and everything like that, and I love hearing the story about how he found talented people to work for him, but he had to ask him to take a pay cut. And the idea, it's exciting, but both scary. The idea of, I have a currently stable job, and the idea of me dropping that job to go to a, yo, there's a chance you may not get a paycheck tomorrow. But you're all driven by the possibility that it will go big. I think I'm realizing I got to give credit to the people who worked, who accepted that offer. Because I don't know if I could. Like, I would have to really believe in your idea or my idea. That's a separate story. That's my own idea. I'm trying to imagine having an idea so powerful enough that would make me say, fuck it. I'm going to take that risk. Another idea that came to mind is, this time, this is an aspect of myself that this book is just making me think about who I was and who I am now. And one part, there's a part of the story where Mark Randolph is talking about how he made sure that, basically talks about his wife. Well, stop talking about his wife, man. What the fuck? I think he's pussy whipped. No, I'm kidding. I'm really kidding. No, this it was a bad joke. I was making one of those man jokes to say, like, no, this dude loved his wife, man. It's not just that he loved his wife, but it was clear she was a partner. I bring this up because the younger version of me, I used to, someone said, hey, you want to be a success? Study the people you want to be successful like. I used to read a lot of Word Up magazine, no, Forbes magazine, about who was the latest tech gear, who was the latest millionaire, whatever the fuck, who was making it in the industry. I used to read all those magazines. That was the in thing. What are magazines? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Back in the days, you would get your information from a thing called, you know what? Google what a magazine is. But I would go to a magazine store and I would love the tech section, the tech business section. And I would always buy the ones about who's the hottest tech person in the industry. And I used to think, I remember going through the page of and focusing on who had a wedding ring on. Who was married, had kids, and the majority of these people were married, had kids. And I wonder if there's a link between them being successful and being married. And I was close. Whether there was, but what I was close is, but the thing I didn't realize at the time, these people, these tech folks, when they marry, usually they don't marry just because, you know, she got a fat ass or because she's hot. They marry a partner. They marry someone who either brings the best out of them and they bring the best out. Like, again, partner. When I was younger, I didn't understand part of a relationship is finding a partner. The concept of partnership. See, you know, I used to listen to a lot of rap music about my nigga. It's like, yo, I don't snitch on my man and all shit like that. And then bitches ain't shit. Again, I got my education from rap music about relationships. So I was not clear on the fact that they were with people who the movie Casino, right? When what's his name? Not Al Pacino, De Niro's character. He's doing great and this dummy hooks up with some chick that just fucking was the worst thing that happened to him. Like, he was doing great, and this chick brought him down. That used to be a constant theme for me. It's like, oh, man, these rich guys, they marry these chicks, and all she wants is, well, spend time with me, buddy, you know, and, bitch, I got to spend this money. I got to make us this money. I didn't understand the smart folks married their partner. They married someone, like exactly like he said, they married their best friend. There's a part in the book where I'm going back to the book with Mark Randolph, and he talks about how he committed himself. I don't know if it's a Wednesday or a Thursday. There's a day of the week where he commits himself to saying, fuck it, I'm only working 9 to 5 because so I can go home and hang out with my wife. And I love what he said, that he said, you know, so I can hang out with my best friend. And he's committed to that so much that everyone at his work knows that, yo, 5 o'clock, if you have a fucking question for him, you better ask him before 5 because he's out. If you show up to his desk at 4:59, knowing, you better know that you're walking with him towards his car. And he stuck to that commitment. But the biggest part that came out of it is because he goes, I want to hang out with my best friend. One of my a close friend of mine, he said, he was talking about how, because I was making a joke. We're not making a joke, but we're talking about the concept about happy wife, happy life. And he says, the part people don't understand with that line is, happy wife, happy life is because she will reciprocate that shit. Again, I was miseducated on the concept of marriage and what it is to have a partner. I thought happy wife, happy life meant, yo, make this bitch happy. Yeah, like that Chris Rock joke. Sacrifice your happiness to make some chick happy. When the reality is happy wife, happy life, because in her mind, she's already thinking happy husband, happy life. You know, it's her happiness is your happiness. Therefore, it's only right for her happiness to be your goddamn happiness. I guess what I'm trying to say is when I got to the part where he referred to his wife as ma meilleure amie, my best friend, it made me realize that, oh, shit. If I'm the shit right now, it's thanks to this person. And it's wild because he was talking about how sometimes he could bounce ideas with her and he could be all like in the sky, but she's like realistic. Anyway, it was just a powerful line to hear this man, well, the French version of my best friend. Last part, as I was thinking about, is this is part of my journey, part of being on this podcast, is I'm trying to imagine a version of myself who would believe in his own idea to the point of willing to take risk on it. I won't lie, man. The person I am or have been, I've always grew up with the notion that if it came out from you, it can't be good. There's got to be a catch. I used to be, back in high school, I used to rap. And people would come up to me and say, yo, that shit was dope. I was like, yeah, what's the catch? Something's up. Again, self-esteem was shot. I had a low perception of myself. Self-idea of myself. And the idea of me, like, I believe everyone else could do great things, but not me. Because whatever, it's some curse that I believe, that I thought I had. Like I said, that's why I ended up growing up being, yeah, no, there's no way I'm going to come up with a good idea. The best a guy like me can hope for is meeting someone with a good idea and helping them out. And needless to say, that didn't work out. That didn't work out too well. Yeah. You know, I would have loved working on the Obama campaign. But then again, maybe I wouldn't have gotten along with those people. Anyway, yeah, it's a book has me thinking about, yeah, three things. Is optimism, the version of optimism that I am now. I mean, who I was before, who I am now, my optimism, the concept of relationship or a good relationship. And is there a chance that one day I'll grow up? Again, growth. One day I'll have an idea and have, I'm not saying I'm going to take, you know, bet it all on black, but actually have an idea that I believe in and say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do this. Again, love the book. Oh, there we go. The English version of the book. Okay. This links will be in the show notes, is called, That Will Never Work. The Birth of Netflix and the Amazing Life of an Idea by Mark Randolph. Again, reading it in French because it's exercising the part of my brain that needs the exercise. And it's a great combination. By the way, yeah, if you're like one of those Franco-Ontarians like me or French-Canadian who speaks more English than they speak French and are trying to get back to speaking French, I recommend find a book with a great story. And then read the French translation of it. So it's great. Yeah, no, it's taking me back. I love the exercise. It's a great experience. Yeah, and that's the book that I've been stuck with. I mean, there's a lot of books I'm going through, but this is the one worth bringing up. All right, okay. This concludes. Is this it? Let me make sure I got my notes. Yeah, this concludes today's episode. Again, I want to send out a shout out to, look, if you still stick around, Maybe I should do this at the end, but I want to send a shout out to you listeners who, specifically those of you who like connected, resonated to anything, to the things that I said on this podcast. I really want to hear from you. So I want to remind you that email address is shutuppodcast.com. Sorry, website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Before I end the show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they were protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue. Rouge et bleu, motherfucker. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and black folks who say yes to Big Rube's question, are you an outcast? This episode was rated R and F, F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew, and if you happen to want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. This podcast is likely not for you. Thank you for listening, and remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. All right. Peace.